This past Sunday's Pride commemorated the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, which ignited the modern LGBTQ+ rights movement. Over the years, Pride has grown from small community-based protest marches to corporate-sponsored behemoths, attracting millions of people and lasting 12 hours long. Ooh, it's so big!
We have much to celebrate. The decriminalization of same-sex sex, marriage equality, and the military's lift on queer people serving openly. But there's trouble in paradise. Fascists are in control of the government and the media, and they are working hard to undo all the progress made. Plus, boring consumer culture threatens to swallow all of our rainbow goodness.
Today, we take a look at Pride 50. From our own shenanigans at Chicago's Pride Parade to World Pride in New York City.
Also joining us is Jake Tolan from the Reclaim Pride Coalition that successfully organized the Queer Liberation March, which marched against the exploitation of our communities for profit and against corporate and state pinkwashing.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. A little bit at the beginning, a little more later on. Watching all the good things grow, that's how the world goes on. Take a look at the river going into the sea. You'll see how the good things growing better for you and me.
Yay!
Yay! But not transgender people of color. They still need your attention and your love.
They sure do.
Yes. We dedicate this podcast to marginalized people everywhere. Although we've made a lot of amazing progress in the past 50 years, we have a long way to go.
There's so much to celebrate, but we have left a lot of people behind, and they have been letting us know for a very, very long time that they are being left behind. And have we been listening? I hope we have. Some of us have, but our leaders have not.
Have you been listening? Hell no. That's why we gotta, talk a little bit louder.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
Say it for the people in the back.
Yes. I have to say, there's a lot of darkness in the world. And, for people who follow me on social media, sometimes they see me rallying against fighting the good fight against the exploitation of people and innocent people all over the world. And to the point that sometimes I feel saddened and that we're in this situation where it's just like, God, are we ever going to get off this rotten Trump train, these Republicans? Are we ever going to get rid of them? There was a joke that my father used to love to tell.
What's the joke?
Oh. So it was a Puerto Rican, a Dominican, and a Cuban all died and went to heaven.
Oh, so it's a Caribbean joke.
Yeah. But it's a good,
interesting. It's off to a good start.
It's about, politics. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the Cuban said to God, what's going to happen to the future of Cuba? When is the autocracy that we're dealing with? When's Castro going to die? He says, about 20 years after your death, son, it will be resolved. Mm-hmm. And the Cuban got onto his knees and started to cry. Oh, thank you, God. Thank you. And the Dominican says, when is the economic hardship, the racism that my country suffers from, when's that going to be accomplished? When is that going to end? He said, well, about 100 years after your death, my son. And the man got onto his knees and started crying, thank you, God, thank you, God. And the Puerto Rican, that's me, asked God, when is the political strife that tears my island culture apart going to be resolved? And God got on his knees and started to cry.
Aw, because it would never happen.
It'll never happen. But, just because something seems insurmountable doesn't mean it's not worth fighting for. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, meeting everybody, the gorgeous people that we got to meet, especially the gorgeous men and the gorgeous women, were just inspiring. There's
so much.
What about
the gorgeous non-binary people?
And the non-binary people. And part of it is just like, we're online sometimes. We don't necessarily come face to face. And it's just so inspiring to see our wonderfully diverse community in person. And there are people from different classes and economic backgrounds and educational backgrounds, philosophies, different shapes and sizes and colors and flavors. and it makes me want to fall in love with humanity all over again. And if you don't have that experience, I urge you to seek it out in any shape or form that you can have.
Some people, though, they will never have that frame of mind to see the beauty in something like this. There's a lot of people that are just like, I would never be caught dead at a pride parade. Like, to them, it's tacky. It's gross. It's just like, what do they have to be proud of? There is no queer community. It's just me on my own.
And part of it is you have to look into the eyes of these beautiful people and say it to their face. And you can't. Because, you know, they're innocent and they're sweet and there's a lot of good in this world.
Well, and so many of the attendees of the parade were teenage girls. Yeah. I mean, so many. I mean, I'd say 20 to 30% of them were teenage girls. The future of gay rights, folks, is teenage girls. So be good to those teenage girls.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited to be here.
Most of them were just hoping to see a drag queen from RuPaul's Drag Race. And I hope they weren't disappointed.
Well, they got to see me. Future contestant. And that's a part of it is, like, you know, like when people ask me, and they ask any kind of non-binary entertainers, like, don't you ever want to get on RuPaul's Drag Race? And I'm like, it's not the competition that attracts me to it. It's the ability to travel the world and meet face-to-face this amazing, diverse, rainbow tribe that we are. And it's invigorating. I was just so energized by it.
You were energized. Well, let's talk a little bit about our costumes. You went as a beautiful butterfly.
And I have to say, I think as Dominique Jackson says in Pose, this is my new signature move.
And did you remember the lines I had you say?
Well, you wrote,
So I wanted it to work an internet meme in there because it was, you know, a butterfly is about transformation, right?
Yes.
So you go from this caterpillar to a butterfly, right? And the internet joke is about, like, this is not, you don't want to see me in my final form.
I've been gone from a caterpillar. A wretched caterpillar into a beautiful butterfly, but this is not my final form. Say it.
You don't want to see me in my final form unless you're really horny.
A people person.
Or romantically inclined. So I did about 20 videos of Foster trying to say that. And you just couldn't.
Well,
you were
like just yelling at me, making me so nervous. People save me.
I was just like, because it was funny. Because, you know, it's like the caterpillar is, you know, the final form. But is it really?
The butterfly to me is great metaphor for the Pride Parade because, one, in some ways, it's about vanity. Mm-hmm. There's the idea of being seen, inviting to be seen and recognized by both the participants in the parade and the viewers. Mm-hmm. There's this wonderful energy that happens. Mm-hmm. And if you're a person who's only ridden a parade on a float, get off that damn float and touch the people. Shake their hands. Make eye contact. And smile, because you're missing out a lot. The magic happens right there at the periphery of the parade.
Yeah, touching them, high-fiving them, taking photos with them, kissing them, smelling their armpits, having them smell your armpits.
And it's the best way to get on the evening news.
Ooh.
Both of us got on it.
I haven't seen my footage yet, though. They just have video of me, but they actually interviewed you.
Because they know the good thing when they see it.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah. They're like, let's talk to this freak.
So they go up to me and they're like, we're with ABC 7 News. What do you think about Chicago's Pride? And I'm like, yes. I'm here to, you know, pay tribute to, and I did say, to marginalized people everywhere, but especially trans people of color who need our love, our acceptance, and our efforts to make them welcome everywhere. And
they cut that part out.
They did not use that part.
The part that they used was what?
They asked me, what do you think about Lori Lightfoot as Chicago's first openly gay mayor? I said, well, with Lori Lightfoot as Chicago's first openly gay mayor, it's Gay City USA.
Yay.
And they used that. What I wanted to say was Dyke City USA, but I knew they were not going to use it. Mm-hmm. So I gave them a little bit of something that was, you know, a little edgy or pushing the boundaries and something that was very acceptable for them to be able to use. And you know, the goal was to be seen, to be invited to be seen. And I was very thrilled to be there. And then God showed up with a thunderstorm.
Well, before that, let's talk a little bit, because we marched with PFLAG, and we've done that for the past couple years now. Always delightful. It's, you know, for people that don't know, it's parents and friends of gay and lesbian Of lesbian and gay.
It's not about water sports. Right. It's about family.
About family and stuff. And so, you know,
but when you're taking care of babies, it is about water
sports. The organization was, I believe, created in like the late 80s or something like that. So the name might be a little outdated now because they are welcoming of all people. And we did have the president on before, John and Char. They were a married
John
couple.
John and Char CPAC.
CPAC, yes. So some of the listeners from like long ago, probably about 10 years ago, might remember them. And unfortunately, I just found out this year that John had died a few years ago. So, and they got involved because they had a son who was gay and said, you know what, we're accepting of our gay son. Why are not more parents accepting of their gay sons? So they joined this organization. They became leaders in the organization. And it has had a profound effect on so many people because they've discovered like one of the most important things for, especially for gay youth, is to just have one person and their life to believe in them and to accept them unconditionally for who they are. And if that person is a family member, all the better.
I noticed that the Dykes on Bikes invited every kind of gender identity to participate.
Oh, they did?
They're no longer TERFs. Oh. I don't know if they were before, but I did notice that there were a lot of trans flags in the Dykes on Bikes.
Oh,
and
that's great.
I thought that was fantastic.
Well, that's great.
And I saw a lot of gyms with very... beautiful people of all gender identities marching and celebrating.
Yeah, I saw a lot, like you did say, I saw a lot of trans flags all throughout the, I mean, I'd say after the rainbow flag, the trans flag was the number one flag I saw afterwards.
But you know what the most beautiful thing I saw in the parade?
My beard?
Well, besides our costumes, is my design, our designs. I saw our Feast of Fun t-shirts, like every now and then, the Obama rainbow one, the Hunty University, the not shaving gives me more time for misbehaving shirts. It's like running into an old friend or a long lost family member. And I run to them and I just go, thank you so much for supporting our podcast. Every time you buy those shirts, it makes such a big difference in our ability to do this show. And I just, you know, I'm the designer of that. And I just want to thank you so much. I don't know if a friend about, and they're like, me, like, I'm insane.
Oh yeah.
They're like, who the hell are you?
It's in your eyes.
Why are you talking to me? This is just a shirt. I don't know where I found this. Go away from me, crazy lady. And I'm just like, look, it's weird to see your creations out in the world. And yet sometimes people love it. And sometimes people are indifferent to it. I designed really quickly the Cougar Pride flag many, many, many years ago. And a lesbian blogger saw it and she appropriated it. And used it to be the lipstick lesbian flag. And she's racist and she's a TERF, but I would like to think that, you know, the flag means more than just her narrow view of the world. And it was so exciting to see all these people having the lipstick lesbian flag that I designed, waving it. And the ones that I went up to, I said, I'm the person who made that flag, you know?
And they're like, you're crazy.
And no, they were like, really? Tell me more. They were like, they actually like were open to it. And they were so happy to meet the person who designed it.
Aww,
and I was like, sweet. Thank you. I just want to be recognized for my contributions to the world.
Your manipulation of stock photography is amazing.
What do you mean?
Well, the lips, right?
Oh, that's so if you ever need a set of lips, you can just go to, there's all these free stock photography places. And so I took the bear flag and I changed it to, you know, shades of lipstick and I stuck a lips on the top left and that became the lipstick lesbian flag.
And then the lipstick lesbian person though, didn't they change the colors a little bit though?
They put the, a white stripe in the middle. So they kind of flipped it around, but mine was more closer to the design of the bear pride flag. Mm. And, and so, you know, she's out there claiming that it's hers, but I got receipts, girl. Mm-hmm.
The internet does not lie.
Just saying. It was just so great to see all these people and all this wonderful stuff. And
then, of course, we got rained out.
They got wet, honey, and not between my legs.
the rain came down. We went through most of the Pride route, and then we're like, let's go, let's stop, and let's get out here, and we'll start heading back to our place because we're going to go up to Pride North later. But then Fausto discovered this cute little boy with his parents in the lemonade stand. He's just like, oh, I have to tell you all about the lemonade stand that I had. And I'm just like, we are going to get rained on.
This is going to take 30 minutes.
And so the $2 lemonade cost us 2-3 hours of travel time and getting caught in the rain.
Oh, you don't stop and listen, folks.
What?
May you find somebody to love you like Mark loves me, but you have to stop and smell the roses. Mm-hmm. And when you have a partner for life, if you're the kind of person who's always in a hurry, you need to marry somebody who stops and smells the roses. And sometimes that's Mark and sometimes that's me. Mm. And so, at this point in time, here we had this amazing, sweet family celebrating Pride. You know, they don't know if their son's going to grow up to be gay or no. He's 10 years old or 12 years old, you know. But this little boy was like, I want to do a lemonade stand just like the Peanuts cartoon.
Well, he's like, you know, the big corporations are cashing in on Pride. I'm going to cash in on Pride, too.
Yeah. And so the little boy and his mom and dad were selling lemonade and giving half of the proceeds to charities, to good charities.
Aww.
And not HRC, you know.
So we got stuck in the rain and we're like, damn. And
but did you know that like their power, it was a nasty storm that shut down power. So people couldn't even get on the trains to get home. Mm-hmm. It was a mob. Yeah. They had to cancel Chicago's Pride Parade.
Yeah. So there was like many, many floats that didn't even get to go down the road because it was raining. Now, we've had rain in the past, but it's like light little rain. But this is going to be thunderstorm and lightning. So they were like, get out of the area. So you've got a million people, right?
The way you move me is frightening.
And it all stuck in this area. And so it was like, it was hard to get out of the area. So I'm just like, we have to go west. We have to go west.
Go west.
And so eventually we went west to Southport. And then we saw the Broadway bus of all buses coming, because that's east of where we were, was coming up Southport. And everybody was like, yay. It was like when a top shows up at the orgy, you just hop right on it.
And what a great bus that was. Mm-hmm. It was all Latinx people.
Mm-hmm. And me.
And Mark. Mark, Latinx, you're Latinx adjacent through marriage. Mm. When you marry a Latino, you are Latino.
Is that right?
Yeah. What do you think? My mother's not Latina?
Well, she was born in Mexico.
Yeah. But still, you know, through marriage, that's how it happens. And we just had a fabulous time with our Mexican-American friends. And we're just like, the party bus doesn't stop, loca. And then I started like hanging from the bars, and Mark's like, get down from there, they're gonna kick us off the bus.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to get kicked off in the rain. So that the traffic was jammed, and it just took, how long do you think it took us? Like an hour and a half on that bus to get home.
It was a slow ride, but you know, I enjoyed the company. We were having a fantastic time, and that's the thing about Pride. And just this mood that gets you in is that no matter how horrible things can get, it's about celebrating your humanity and your community and your shared compassion for each other. Mm. And it's just a magical feeling to have. And no corporation, no tyrant, no vain queen, whether it be from the CEO of a heartless corporation to a person, a despot who runs a bar like with an iron glove can take that away from you. And it was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you know, all over the country, there's not just Pride celebrations, but there's also marches and actions and events. There's Queer Bomb in Austin.
The Dyke March here in Chicago.
Yeah. And in New York City, there was a brand new organization that basically got together to create a march to reclaim Pride. They call themselves the Reclaim Pride Coalition. And we just happened, one of our dear listeners, Jake Tolan, is one of the people involved in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you want to talk to Jake?
Let's talk to him. Do you think he's home? Should we call him?
Let's call him up.
Let's call him up.
Hello?
Hi, is this Jake Tolan?
This is.
This is the phone down? Company.
Oh God! I don't have my bills. I spent all my money on Saturday.
Yeah, Pride's over. Now you gotta pay your bills.
You can't pay it in rainbows and glitter.
I can damn well try, though.
How you doing, Jake? This is Fausto, by the way,
and Mark from Feast of Fun.
I'm not the phone company. I'm not the bill collector.
Hi, Fausto and Mark. I am doing wonderful. I am still in an afterglow from Pride.
Mm. You better go see a doctor about that.
It's not itchy anymore, so I think that's good. It's a good sign.
Your Pride pussy is stretched out. You did the Queer Liberation March on Sunday morning, a resistant march to draw attention to the needs of progressive causes. And then you did Pride 50 later in the afternoon, right?
I did, yes. Well, I mean, I did as much as possible. So, and even before the march that morning, the night before, I was up all night setting up for the rally in Central Park. So,
at the beginning, you were like, yay, Pride! And at the end of the day, you were like, yay, Pride!
Exactly, yes. I slept through the entire day yesterday. I had to take off work.
It takes a lot out of you. I mean, come on. World Pride, New York City, 50th anniversary of Stonewall. There's a lot going on.
Double the amount of people that are normally in the island of Manhattan.
Yes. It was unbelievable.
And it went without a hitch. I mean, I at least that I read, you know, I mean, there were protesters and you were one of them, right? But, you know, relatively it was to be expected, the public reaction, but there was no violence, at least that we saw.
Yeah, I didn't see any either. And I think that was really gratifying to us too, because with our march, our initial fundamental tenets were there are going to be no corporations, no corporate floats, and no police invited to march with us. And the police presence there was really minimal. We had no barricades. There were a couple police at the front, basically just because we were taking up all of Sixth Avenue, so they were like stopping traffic for us. But there was no violence there, and we had community marshals who were taking care of any, you know, minor grievances that might have just two people who don't like each other or having to walk next to each other, whatever.
You saw what I wore for the Pride Parade here in Chicago. I was dressed up as a butterfly.
I did, with a big blue beard.
And I was channeling Billy Porter, drawing attention to trans people of color as best beautifully represented in the television show Pose. And everybody wanted me to dance and flutter like a butterfly. And then one of those marshals, I whacked her on the head as I was turning around.
Twirling
like a butterfly. And she looked at me like she was ready to punch me in the face. And she said, "You're lucky you're so cute. Otherwise, I'd have you kicked out of the parade."
I'm sure it's not the first time you've heard that, Val. So.
And I was just like, you know, I was really terrified because I was like, oh, God, here come the police. They're going to throw me in prison. Butterflies can't go to prison. Butterflies are meant to be free. So, Jake, tell us about the Reclaim Pride Coalition. How did this come together? Because, you know, we hear in the news and in our own communities, all these kind of counter protests, celebrations, political actions meant to draw attention or to criticize the usage of pride parades as a promotional tool for businesses or corporations or politicians.
Yeah, so it really started in 2017, that year's Pride Parade, which is the one immediately following the 2016 election. And a bunch of groups in New York City got together and said, you know, in this moment in time, we need to make a big political statement for Pride. And so we put together this resistance contingent, is what we called it, that marched at the front of New York City Pride. And if you look up any pictures of that Pride Parade, there's like a big We Resist banner that is like the most prominent imagery for that year.
Yeah.
And so it was really about this like anti-Trumpism, anti-fascism, bringing a political, really strong political force within the LGBT community to the forefront of how people see us. And then when we tried to do that again in the 2018 one, after even more anti-LGBT bullshit had happened, and can I swear on this podcast?
I don't know. Yes, of course.
Okay. Fuck yes.
With pleasure.
We tried to do it again, and we got actually a lot of pushback from the organizers of NYC Pride. They actually disinvited us. And so we got together the groups who had signed up for it. And when we did that, we realized we have all these other problems. It's not just that they disinvited us. It's that fundamentally the Pride Parade as it exists now is really conservative. It's weird to have such an overly saturated police presence. It's completely barricaded. You can't enter it, even though the original ones were protests and were about bringing community together. It has corporate floats from, you know, companies that are destroying our communities in different ways. Like, one of the major sponsors for this year's NYC Pride Parade is Deloitte, who's working with ICE. So they're profiting off of these concentration camps at our border. And they're going out there, you know, painted in rainbows, basically as a PR opportunity to try and cover up that image. But, you know, there are queer people on the borders who are, at least 17 people with HIV have died in ICE custody. Mm-hmm. And so anyone who's profiting off of that is no friend of queer people and has no place in these parades. So just about 20 or so organizations that it started got together and we said, we need this to change. And so we tried to work with the organizers for a long time about any kind of compromise we could do to make this just an event that better represents our community, not even necessarily like a really leftist event or something, but just one that was not so abusive to us, that didn't turn away people of color and immigrants and poor people, and didn't have police harassing kids just for having a good time.
Chris Frederick, he's the executive director of the organization that puts together New York City's Pride Parade since 1984. The name of the organization is kind of clumsy sounding. Heritage of Pride Incorporated, a nonprofit LLC. And I imagine that putting together this very complicated event takes a lot of money. He says, Reclaim Pride doesn't help. This is your group. Doesn't help the community come together. In a time that we're supposed to be united as one, in a time that's so scary for our community for a wide variety of reasons, Reclaim Pride has decided to divide the narrative.
Mm.
What you got to say to her about that? Hmm?
So, I mean, she knows just as well as I know that we aren't the ones who divided it. We went above and beyond to try to work with them, and any of the solutions that we gave them to come up with compromises, they shot down.
Why is he being disingenuous, you think?
Well, it is the dominant parade. And the other thing is NYC Pride in particular is the most visible pride in the world. Everybody knows when it happens. I mean, it's in newspapers all across the country that NYC Pride has happened. So they're the organization that owns the trademark. They're obviously one of the biggest pride events in the world. It's not hard for them to claim, to a certain extent, rightfully, that theirs is like the original one and anything else is deviating it, trying to divide.
Mm.
But I think from our perspective, we started with the position of centering people who are most marginalized within our community and listening to their concerns and hearing that they don't feel like they're welcome in that pride. They don't feel like it speaks to them at all. And so the idea that we're dividing them and not that this event has been dividing our community for years is just ridiculous to me. I mean, it shows a serious lack of awareness of what's actually happening in the LGBT community.
Do you think that he has an ulterior motive? I mean, I imagine that they would welcome having double the amount of people that are normally there to have other types of events that may limit the massive number of the crowds. Like, why are they being size queens in this regard?
Well, I think I know why he's being a size queen. But in this regard, I think the truth is Heritage Pride Hop puts on a lot of events around the Pride season in New York. They have like 20-something events, and the Pride Parade is just one of them. And kind of, in principle, we don't really have the same issues that we do, the same issues with other events like the family movie night or something that we do with the Pride Parade and the way they're being managed. And actually, a lot of the events they do are great. But the issue for us is that they use the Pride Parade basically to make money for all of those events. And so instead of treating it as kind of like, you know, the crown jewel, the most important symbol of our community within this whole season of Pride, they treat it as a money-making opportunity, which is just, in our opinion, is just a backwards.
So they make money from the parade?
They absolutely do. They have contracts with a lot of these corporations, some of them multi-year, and they just make a ton of money off of it. It's a really big fundraising opportunity. And then they use that money to put on things like the Pride Island concert and these family movie nights, and they have a conference and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it does, I'm not going to say it's totally bad because mm-hmm. they do use that money to create events that are nice, but what we are saying is there's a different way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And also we need to have a priority straight and understand that the Pride Parade specifically.
Mm-hmm. But to be clear though, the Pride Parade is a nonprofit foundation. They use this money to create other programming. It's not a for-profit organization.
Yes, that's correct. And almost all the money that they make goes directly into these events.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm trying to understand, like, you know, in terms of Reclaim Pride Coalition, you know, it seems like the Queer Liberation March was a success by your measurements. What was the attendance for that?
We had 45,000 people. It blew us away.
And you expected, like, you know, 100 people, like, to show up. I mean, it was Sunday morning. When did you guys start this? At like 9 a.m. in the morning?
9:30 outside the Stonewall Inn. Sheesh. And I remember getting there at 8:30 because I was marshalling it. So we were there early to just kind of debrief and go over the plan for the day. And there was no one there. There was no one there. And I walked into Starbucks to get an orange juice. And I was in line for like 10 minutes. And when I walked outside, it was just a sea of people. Like, I couldn't even move around. It was unbelievable. They all just showed up like magic.
So it was like, what is it, Field of Dreams? You built it and they came and came and came.
Exactly. I mean, and that was really one of the biggest lessons that we learned through this whole thing, is that if you want to reach the moon, you have to shoot for the stars. Mm-hmm. So the whole time we had to keep fighting back those voices of, well, maybe we should curtail it. Maybe we should go for a smaller venue or whatever. We said, no, we have to keep believing that this is going to be the big event that we want it to be. And it was. It turned into this really magical moment.
So at your core, what is the organization fighting for?
We're trying to center the most marginalized people, which is something that the original Gay Liberation Front is really about. And so those people have different issues. What I like to say is that if anything affects a single queer person, that is a queer issue, and we all need to be concerned about it. And for so long in our movement's history, it's really been driven by this idea of, you know, what can we do that will bring queer people more into the fold of like a white, heterosexual, middle class standard model? And what we're saying is, when we put those things up and we try and talk about gayness as if it only affects white people, or even LGBTness as if it only affects gay people, then we're just putting barriers to ourselves that are preventing us from really addressing the issues that are affecting our community. We are poorer. 40% of homeless youth are LGBT. You know, HIV/AIDS is still a serious issue, especially in communities of color. And our movement has kind of forgotten these things as we've gotten successes like marriage that only really affect a small amount of people. I'm not going to say it's not an accomplishment. It's a great right for us to have now. But I'm not married. The fact that I could get married in the future is not affecting the discrimination that I currently face as an LGBT person, as a gay person.
Well, do you guys subscribe to the idea that the push for marriage equality was done not because it was an easy goal to accomplish, but because it was convenient for wealthy people who could afford lawyers and accountants and didn't need marriage equality in the first place? Notice my because actually, you know,
very leading question
there. But yeah, I mean, because it feels like, you know, in terms of marriage equality in progressive groups, I always notice that it's always framed as sort of the rich people's cause, when people like Elton John doesn't need marriage equality. Edie Windsor didn't really. I mean, she spent a lot of money. She lost a lot of money because there was no marriage equality. But in the big picture of things, it's the poor that benefit from marriage equality laws and access to marriage. It's not the wealthy who really need it.
Yeah, I don't really think that, like you said, I think it's the major benefits that we got out of it were, it was a new path to citizenship for immigrants. It helped to secure finances for really poor couples. Those are really important benefits that we've gotten out of it. But what I think is, you know, in the same way that in the early 70s, just after the Stonewall Uprising, just after the Compton's cafeteria riots and the gay pride parades in 1970, we started advertising saying that gay people are wealthier. And then we, even when we got into the AIDS crisis, one of the big failings of our community was that when we reached a point where it was basically safe, where it was not a serious issue for middle-class white gay men, we kind of forgot about it and said that it was over. But the AIDS crisis isn't over. And so marriage equality is just kind of another thing in that long line of issues that were very important to white people who wanted to, you know, kind of move it, get back into the fold of a conservative kind of family model an idea of what your life should be, and leaving behind all those people who are not super, who have bigger issues to worry about. Like, if you're a Black trans woman, being murdered is a bigger issue to you than getting married.
Well, it was marriage at the expense of all other things on the list. You know, people just put all their time, all their energy into it. And you can kind of see in some senses, you know, it's a very romantic notion. It's this idea of love. Two people shouldn't have, you know, when your partner of 30 years dies from AIDS in the hospital, you shouldn't be thrown out on the street, you know, and lose your apartment because his family comes in and takes everything. And we saw that time and time again over in the community. But because we've left so many other people behind, is I think where a big part of the issue is. Then also too, for, you know, very progressive people who are anti-capitalist queers, you know, marriage is an institution meant to be a function of capitalism. A man's supposed to be married to a woman, they're supposed to have kids, and they're supposed to be worker units. And as, you know, as queer people, many people reject that notion that, you know, people are people and they should be respected and they should be given dignity no matter what their living situation is, whether they have a partner, whether they have kids, whatever.
Exactly. And I think going back to Fausto's original question about what Reclaim Pride is about, a big thing that we wanted to do with this event, knowing that it's the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, was to refocus the conversation about queer rights away from that kind of love is love ideology that was so effective in the marriage campaign, into understanding that LGBT people actually have an entirely different culture from most people. And it's not just about who we love. That's a very tiny portion of our culture generally, actually.
Yeah, every time I see somebody say love is love, I know that they're stupid.
It is kind of a trite little expression, right? But, you know, it tugs at people's hearts, and it has won us some measure of equality.
It's like something that you would see on a Hummel figurine at the Hallmark gift card shop. Mm-hmm. It's garbage, you know? It's going to be landfill shit.
You have listeners looking at their posters, like on their desk, that says love is love right now, and they're crying because they're like, oh.
Listen, as Coco Peru says this, and I love it. She says, may all your dreams come true. Unless you have shitty dreams, then you need better dreams. And part of it is like, I think in some ways, you know, I really appreciate the unsurmountable task of pushing for a progressive cause in the height of this frenzy of a 50-year anniversary of this. You know, look, we are in some ways very successful. We're legit in most major urban environments. Most Western nations have universal health care, recognize same-sex couples' marriage, do provide transitional services for transgender people, do have great homeless youth shelters for trans and LGBT youth. It's just the United States is one of the worst ones there is. And we're just sort of been hijacked by conservatives.
United States is one of the worst places to be an LGBT person. There are places where if you're out, you're going to be
In the Western world, we're talking about.
Okay.
You know, yeah, Africa and the Middle East is going to be tough. You know, in Asia, there's other challenges. Yeah.
Consider part of the Western world. But.
So, you know, and part of it is, I think it's important to, and I'm glad that you guys use ACT UP's Pink Triangle as a reminder of this sort of like this very important message that silence equals death and action equals life, that we can't take our role in the world and our marginalization lightly. And when we are able to accomplish great things, that we need to bring everybody, especially the most marginalized, the most vulnerable in our society.
Yeah. And I do want to give a shout out to Robin Scott, who made a very thoughtful decision in using the original colors of the Silence Equals Death logo in our marketing to kind of evoke that really powerful activist spirit that's so rooted in the gay community.
Did you guys get permission from ACT UP or Grand Fury or the...
ACT UP is one of the original groups that is part of our coalition. So I don't know that we talked to the artists specifically, but they voted in favor of these designs. So I'm going to say yes.
So Reclaim Pride Coalition is sort of the new generation of progressive activism that stems from it's a direct descendant of ACT UP in New York.
Yeah, I mean, it's a direct descendant of a lot of things, really. No Justice, No Pride definitely had a really profound impact on us. They're based in D.C., and they very famously disrupted the D.C. Pride the 2017 D.C. Pride. And I think they also did it last year, but the 2017 one is really what made waves. And even I was listening to a podcast recently with Kimberly Crenshaw interviewing Barbara Smith, who Barbara Smith is like this legendary lesbian thinker or writer. And she was famous because she helped to found the Cumbie River Collective. And even she said, like, you know, I see the threads of the Cumbie River Collective coming into Reclaim Pride, that we were confronted with a situation that we couldn't adapt to fit us. And so we made our own space that could better speak to our community.
Did you get some pushback from the city? Because because they already had this World Pride coming and they've millions and millions of people. And then you guys come along and say, hold on a second.
we got mixed issues. I mean, part of it too is that we were explicitly saying, you know, basically fuck the police the entire time. And then we had to go to NYPD and say, so we're going to do a march. Mm-hmm. Will you let us do it? Mm-hmm. Which was really more a statement of, we're going to do the march, so why don't you make this as painless for yourself mm-hmm. as possible?
I'm always surprised when I see people's Facebook updates, you know, because, you know, Toronto dealt with this a few years back where they're like, we don't want the police in here. We don't want the marching in the gay pride parade. And then people, you know, often really just want to come to the defense of the police and saying we have to incorporate all people into it. The police are here to protect us, et cetera, et cetera. I mean,
you have no idea how many, I mean, the most contentious thing that we said, because everyone's like, oh, yeah, it's way too corporate. We don't want the floats. And then we don't want to be barricaded and stuff. And then we say no cops. And they're like, but what about the gay cops?
Like, well. Well, you know, can take their uniform off and march in the parade like a normal person.
Exactly. If they want to come as a civilian, that's fine. But as an institution, the police, it's not just murdering people, which they are doing, mm-hmm. but it's also, especially in New York, locally, we have this thing called Rikers Island, which you may have heard of. It's known for being abusive and negligent to its inmates. And in fact, recently, a 27-year-old transgender woman, Laylene Polanco, died in Rikers Island. She was put into solitary confinement or some kind of specialized housing unit, and she died. And what's also important to know about Rikers Island is that 80%, I think it might even be 85% of the inmates in that jail at any given time are not convicted of crimes. It's just that they didn't have bail money, so they're being detained there, which is what happened with Laylene Polanco. So she died under the custody of these guards or whatever. She was put there by the NYPD simply because she was poor and she was, I think she was Afro-Latina, and she was transgender. And basically they're setting up people all the time. And if you are poor, you are going to get sent to prison just because you can't afford bail. So you're not even convicted of anything. You're just getting sent to Rikers. So for us,
I thought Detective Olivia was nice on Law and Order.
I mean,
that's what, like, people don't realize. All those cop TV shows is just propaganda, you know, like, and I'm friends with some police officers and I'll tell it to their face. And I was like, you guys are pushy people. You know, it's like you don't come across as you do on those TV shows.
Yeah. And so for gay cops, it's like, they can be nice people individually, but as an institution, the NYPD is not our friend. And we know that. They're stealing, trapping people. They're throwing people in prison. They're murdering people. And so it is great that you have created a work environment that is more friendly to be gay in, but there is no evidence that you are actually helping our community's relationship with the police and stopping the homophobia and transphobia that is being taken out violently on us. So I understand that you may want to make it better, but you're not currently, and that uniform is really threatening to a lot of people. So please understand that if you are about this fight, you need to be doing more. And the very least you can do is to take that thing off when you're trying to be supporting us.
Well, you know, Stonewall was a protest against the police and the mafia. And so it's just in some ways it's like, you know, respect, to the police officers out there. I'm glad you're there at the parade. I'm glad you're protecting the people there. But it's just like, do you really need to be in it? You know, respect that space.
And actually, I'm not I wouldn't even say that, because I wouldn't say that the police are protecting the people at the parade. Mm-hmm. I think protection came from us as marshals and, mm-hmm. and as community members who could speak to people who were starting to act up or something. Mm-hmm. But like I said, the police are threatening and dangerous. Most people, or I'm not going to say most, but many people in our community do not find them to be any source of protection. Mm-hmm. So we don't want them there.
Jake, did you check out Bloomberg's excellent article on why queer bars, lesbian bars, gay bars need to leverage the power they've accomplished in the last 50 years and find a new purpose besides serving drinks, which is a great purpose, to queer folks in order to stay relevant? In the past, I think it was in the past decade, there's half as many gay bars in the United States as there were in the past. And a lot of owners of gay bars are, some of them are kind of mixed. Some of them are saying, hey, you know, actually, all this social media is actually helping us because our environments are less sex oriented and more, you know, social oriented. Where some other people are like saying, it's like, you know, what happened to you, man? You used to be cool. You used to be edgy. And now, you're reading, drag queens are reading books to kids. What's up with that?
I think it's just, it's a progression of the times and how things are changing with technology and the different ways that people are meeting each other. So some of that is the kind of like assimilationist corporatist thing, just because like we just talked about, that's been the kind of dominant way that we've imagined gay rights for the past, 20, 30 years at least. But at the same time, I think there's still a lot of creativity within the LGBT community. And we're finding other ways to meet up and express ourselves and still be that kind of radical outlier. I mean, our march was a really good example of that. This was not kind of the dominant gay rights narrative that showed up there. It was an old but a new formulation of a really radical environment. And we all got there together in person and met each other and had a really great time.
Well, one thing that I think the Stonewall Inn in New York City and Greenwich Village is doing right is creating a performance space upstairs. And I think any gay bar that wants to continue being relevant is going to create spaces for artists, for free spirits, for mentoring, for elders to connect with their own community. And those who do not will be forgotten, and they will be dust in time.
Speaking of the Stonewall, I guess was it Saturday night at the Stonewall Inn, there was a woman came forward and wanted to talk about, the trans people that have been murdered this year. And the patrons of the bar were like, get her out of here. Call the cops. You've got to go. And I guess it caused quite a kerfuffle. And eventually they allowed her to speak. And, and there was a moment of remembrance for these people who have died.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is such a great portrayal of exactly what the gay rights movement is right now, right? I mean, I think in the back of our minds, we all know that these terrible tragedies are happening, but so many people are just like, no, don't tell me about it. I don't want to know about it. You're ruining my day. Mm-hmm. Well, people are getting fucking murdered. What do you think their days are like? Mm-hmm.
Well, they better not have read Larry Kramer's address to the 2019 Queer Liberation March. Were you there for his speech?
I was there for his speech. Larry Kramer is such a pillar of our community. He's also always extremely cranky.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. But there's some, he does have some definitely some good points there, but he thinks we're doomed in many ways.
Well, I think, like Larry Kramer in The Normal Heart, when they did an HBO, Mark Ruffalo, who mm-hmm. plays the Hulk, mm-hmm. played Larry Kramer, which I think was brilliant casting because Larry Kramer is always angry. And I think, in terms of Larry Kramer's sense of justice and sense of outrage, mm-hmm. it is spot on. Mm-hmm. And right now, these concentration camps, they have been started by Republicans. The climate change denial is full force. And it is in charge of, it's being caused by Republicans. But the world is going to judge us on what we do, not what the Republicans do. And that's something, that really needs to sink in to every single person who is marching down and smiling and dancing and having a good time, you know, and I, you know, even like looking at Madonna's Pride 50 celebration performance, like she was bringing in a lot of this stuff in there into her performance, you know, mishmashing it with Madame X. But it is a situation where there's a sense of helplessness. Iconoclast Suki Delacroix says, "We are being entertained to death." There's so much to distract us, but there's this.
Well, that's what Larry's saying too. Yeah. All we want to do is dance and get on our apps and have sex and do drugs. And it's like, if you have time to do that, then you have time to get out, find a purpose and fight back, because this government wants you, dear queer person listening, they want you dead.
Well, I mean, what do you think I'm doing? I am living proof that it is possible.
Well, you're not doing enough.
You know? You only did one parade.
Yeah, what do you want, a medal? Do you want a parade for the parade? I'm just kidding. I really do appreciate you, what you guys are doing, and I hope that this is just the beginning of something much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope so, too. We've been just flooded with messages all since Sunday, since during the march, of people telling us, you know, I've never felt included like this in an event like this. I've never experienced something like this since the 60s. And just saying, we really need this to continue. We can't wait to see how it evolves. Is it going to happen again next year? I don't have any answers for that right now.
Well, how long was your parade from start to finish? How long was your parade?
It was approximately 4 miles.
Okay.
Yeah. So time-wise.
The march actually started at 9:30. We probably hit the Great Lawn, which was our end point in Central Park, by like 1:30 or 2 o'clock.
So like 4 hours.
And then because we had a rally afterwards. It didn't end until 4:30.
Because the other parade, and I was talking to Vivacious, the drag queen, the other day, and she's like, "Oh yeah, the parade was like, I went out and then saw it in the morning, and then in the evening I went and saw the rest of it." And I was like, "What?" And she's just like, "Yeah, it was over 9 hours long." And I'm like, "Who the 12 hours? Who the fuck needs a 12-hour long parade? That's insane."
You know, this is the thing, too, is with all the international news and stuff and social media, a lot of local politics and news has just been erased. But part of the reason we created this is really rooted in specifically what it's like to be at NYC Pride. And that parade is so freaking mismanaged. In years past, it has exceeded 9 hours. That's like, we just kind of counted on it being 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But because they had so many marchers this year they blamed it. The delays on everybody stopping for too long outside the Stonewall to take pictures. But the reality is 12 hours is too fucking long. And there were groups there who came from all over the world who had a float and wanted to march and didn't step off until 9 p.m. There was nobody on the streets. It was dark and empty and cold. And like, what else are you going to do if you came from Norway or something? And you got the flu, you're going to go, but it's like, how depressing is that? And how rude is it to do that to so many people who came for this event?
Well, you would think that they would cut it off at a certain point and just be like, this is a behemoth. It's grotesque that it would be that long.
Exactly. And I will give a shout out, though, to Gays Against Guns, who were supposed to step off at 7 and... or we're supposed to step off at 5 or something.
PM.
And like 3 hours into their wait in the pen, they just said, you know, fuck it, we're going to jump the fence and just go. And they cut in front of Wells Fargo very deliberately because Wells Fargo funds the NRA. And so they just did their little parade. They cut in line right in front of them and said, you know, fuck these people behind us. We're going to go do our thing.
Awesome.
That's right. If you really want to celebrate Pride, you just jump in whatever you want to do. It's like,
but then the haters and the jerks get in there too sometimes.
Yeah, that's
too
true. They have to filter. They have to. It's an impossible task.
Mm.
You know, really, I think people blow out of proportion this idea that there's going to be haters and jerks and people like that. Like, our march was open to everyone. You could just jump in off the street, and we had none of it. I don't know that we got a single report of counter protesters at all.
Mm.
We had these astroturfers. What do they call them?
I don't even know if I want. I'm not going to give them a name because I don't think they're worth it. But they're an organization that wants queer people to leave the Democratic Party. They're saying we're not specifically. Yeah,
it's bullshit. And it's bullshit. Total bullshit.
And so they were there and they were highly documenting themselves. Like they were filming themselves the whole time walking in with their rainbow colored walk away things. And they were not too far behind us, and I saw them. And I got to tell you, they just looked like the most miserable people you have ever met in your life. You're like, I would pull my hair out if I had to like walk with these people, or even be stuck in a room with them. It was, you could just feel the energy coming off of them that was just so horrid. And believe me, a part of me wants to walk away from the Democratic Party too. But they're like saying walk away from it, and they're also want to embrace the Republicans. They don't say they are embracing the Republicans, but they are very conservative people.
Well, we got into a spat with them that involved the LGBT Center a while ago, because they wanted to have a town hall at the New York LGBT Center.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the speakers they were inviting had said explicitly transphobic things in the future and in the past, and continue to say, like, gender non-binary people simply don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And the LGBT Center was going to let them speak because they're like theoretically an LGBT group, and we were like, no, you have to disinvite them. And and it just, we felt the LGBT Center's response was really lackluster because they initially defended it, which was crazy.
Well, these regressive groups are very welcome to celebrate Pride on Heart Island anytime they like.
But I do want to say,
do you know where that is? You haven't been watching Pose. Give me your gay card back.
Okay. Heart Island is the island where they buried a bunch of people who died of AIDS and they didn't know their name. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. I want to finish my story. Yeah.
Sorry, sorry.
So we basically boycotted the LGBT Center after that and said, you need to do better. And I will say, very thankfully, a couple weeks before our march, we got a letter from the executive director that said, you know, we've looked over what you said, and we absolutely agree. We want to have conversations about you, with you, about how we can revise our policies and what we need to do in order to bring these people that we've, over many years have distanced from the LGBT Center back into the fold and let them know that this really is a community center for them. So
that's great.
It's having an effect. We're doing stuff that is going to make our community more inclusive and inviting for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just want to remind the people who are listening that Feast of Fun is brought to you by MasterCard, AT&T, T-Mobile. Just kidding. It's brought to you by people like you. We can't do the show without your support. We rely on your financial support, not anybody else's, to do this podcast. So if you've ever been thinking about becoming a member, go to feastoffun.com/plus and become a member and access over 15 years of incredible podcasts. Or check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun. Fun.
Maybe you'd like to make a one-time donation, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/donate, or visit our store and get a t-shirt to celebrate your Feast of Fun Corporation Pride.
Corporation free. Well, you know, we're thinking of becoming an LLC too. That's basically so if you fuck things up really bad, they're not gonna like take your home and car away.
So are you gonna do the parade next year? Is this gonna be an ongoing thing?
We don't know. We don't have plans yet. Mm-hmm. I know some people really want to keep. I think we're gonna do something that maintains this spirit no matter what.
Great.
Our original idea was always that there would be one event and it would just be better. So I think my ideal scenario is that Hop, lets go of the reins of their event and just lets us do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the odds of that are very low. So I'm going to guess that chances are we're going to do this march again next year.
Jake, make sure you guys organize a kiss-in, which, you know, is a very important political action to remember that a kiss is still just a kiss.
I mean, there were plenty of people kissing, I got to tell you.
No,
but I think we're a little bit more of the die-in crowd, to be honest.
You what?
At one point in the march, I think we're a little bit more of a die-in crowd than a kissing crowd.
Well, you can lay down on the floor and do whatever you want, you know?
Silence
equals death, but action equals life. You know what I'm saying? Jake, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is wonderful.
Of yeah. Thank you, Jake. Congratulations.
I'm glad the parade was a success and it turned out well. And, you know, kudos to you and to all the other people that are out there fighting. Larry Kramer says we got to fight or we're dead. And I firmly believe it.
And I want to just do a shout out to ReclaimPrideNYC.org, which does need money to run. And if you guys want to make a donation to them, you can go to their website and contact them. Right? There's a donation button there.
There is a donation button there. I'm not sure what we're going to use money for in the future right now because we've been under a fiscal sponsorship. We may have to become a separate entity. But definitely get in contact with us, potentially give a donation or volunteer. I think we've had a lot of people asking about how they could do similar events in their own cities. So we might be trying to put together like a kit for people to help organize themselves. But yeah, we'll see what the future holds. Right now, we had so much energy on the 30th, and now we all just need to sleep for a little bit and figure out where we're going next week.
I feel you.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Jake. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Jake Tolan lives in New York City. One more time, it's the Reclaim Pride Coalition, ReclaimPrideNYC.org.
I think Chicago needs a dose of that. Well, we have the Dyke March, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like the Dyke March takes that place. And they usually do that the Saturday before Pride. It used to run right in front of our house, which was fantastic because we just like wait for the sound of the djembe drums and the hooting and the holler, and then we're like, oh, let's go follow them, and then we'd go and hang out with them at the lakefront.
We're sitting in our front porch sipping tea, then you hear mm-hmm. It's like time to join the Dyke March. I think there's in this kind of conversation that's happening, it takes a village to bring about positive change. And I want, you know, we all, you know, LGBTQ people are all about rejecting binaries. Mm-hmm. And I think there is this binary that we're sort of developing that it's either assimilation or liberation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I definitely hear from the people, you know, from people like Chris Frederick, from people like Jake Tolan, the desire to have their voices heard. And the goal of, you know, fighting for progressive change. They just have different ways of going about it. And I'm grateful that there's a diversity of voices all sort of trying to go into this goal. I just think, you know, when you are getting money from a corporation that profits from putting innocent people in concentration camps, it's dirty money. Mm-hmm. And you really have no business accepting that.
Yeah, you should not accept it, and you should not have the people in the parade. Listen, a Pride parade does not need to be 9 hours long. It does not need to be 12 hours long. The Chicago Pride parade, you know, does it really need to? Well, ours got cut short, but you know, that can be 5-6 hours long. Yeah. Does it need to be that long? It doesn't.
But it's so big. Yeah, New York City had 100 corporate groups and sponsors just for World Pride. Mm-hmm. This is not the theater groups. This is not the politicians. This is not the community centers having their march like PFLAG or whatever. This is just like, you know, NyQuil putting, you know, go to sleep, my pretties. Mm. Have you seen the NyQuil Pride boxes?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's such an interesting symbol of what corporations want to do, which is, you know, relax. Everything's going to be okay.
Just take the pill and go to sleep.
Somebody pointed out that at midnight on, you know, on mm-hmm. July 1st,
12:01 a.m.
The all the corporate logos mm-hmm. on Twitter mm-hmm. went from the rainbow version mm-hmm. to the normal mm-hmm. version again.
Yeah, Lady Bunny shared a meme that I've seen shared other places where it's, you know, there's a guy and there's this brick wall and it's painted a rainbow and then he's whitewashing it all, like the rainbow away. And I said, don't worry, Lady Bunny, they'll never be able to whitewash a brick like you. I don't think she liked it, though.
She didn't.
Well, she didn't like it on Facebook. She didn't press the little button. But she doesn't always, you know.
I'm just so busy.
She's busy.
I'm doing things. She does listen to our podcast. Hmm. Lady Bunny, like my status. Or you're a hater. We don't have to agree on everything. Just to be friends. That's that's the thing I want to like drive forward. It's like, you know, cultivate and celebrate artists and free spirits and allow for mentorship to happen. Cause we suffered something terrible. We suffered AIDS and we lost so many important voices, a whole generation of people. And we're still struggling with that today. In some ways we're the orphan generation and we need everybody to be their mama and papas, honey, channel the inner daddy and cultivate and love and nurture, the youth, the children. And you can be a father figure. You can be a mother figure, a parental figure to anybody, to yourself even.
Oh, that's a sweet sentiment.
It's important to cultivate and celebrate.
Love and self-love.
Remember, like Patti Bell sang, I can't believe I found this song.
Oh, you finally found it.
So this is, I'm just so shocked by this. This is one of my favorite songs of all time. It's from Sesame Street. Joe Raposo, the great composer who composed Sing, Sing a Song, Make It Simple to Last Your Whole Life Long. He wrote another song that he sings a little bit.
Aw.
A little bit. And Patti LaBelle heard it and was so inspired, she got her gospel choir to cover it.
Mm.
And we'd like to leave this for you guys today. This is a rare song. So I wrote to Joe Raposo's son and I said, the album has the wrong track. It has this annoying Elmo, like, tickle your hands and touch your feet and blah, blah, you know. And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. And he went out of his way and snuck it in to another track and uploaded it to YouTube. And this is all these years later. I've been searching for this song for 20 years, and I finally found it last week. And I want to share this song with you. Honey, Patti LaBelle is taking us to church and taking us out. I'm Fausto Fornos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
At the beginning.